For a little while, they opened Buckingham Palace, where the Queen, of course, resides, and the King, and that visitors. I think it's the only time they ever did that. I think they had to pay some tax or something. And for a couple of years, you could go through Buckingham Palace. So I've been to the Queen's house, and I've eaten at the Queen's house. Actually, I really have. And when I did, the guard said, "Put that up. You can't eat that in here." You know. Turn in your Bible, if you will, tonight to Deuteronomy 32, verse 7. I do appreciate all the missionaries, and thank God for every one of you, and Pastor, and all the, you have just a fantastic church. Deuteronomy chapter 32, and we look at verse 7 for a bit of a springboard tonight. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 7. I want to preach on the loneliest grave in Scotland. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 7. Remember the days of old, consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee. Remember the days of old. I'm a lover of history. I love history, and I don't think you can really fully understand the day in which we live today if you do not understand our yesterdays. All of our yesterdays have brought us to this day today. And our past life has brought us to this moment tonight. We are the product of generations past. To study the past, and I am a student of history. When we're in a certain place, I like to find out what happened there. And I was up in West Virginia while way back, a church on the end of the road, way back in West Virginia. I asked a deacon, I said, "What happened here?" That's interesting, it's historical. He said, "We're so far back, nothing happened here, you know, at some places like that." I've gone to museums, and I was in a museum in what used to be East Germany. And I thought, what can you find here? The communists were in control of East Germany. Went in the museum, and there in that museum, I saw Nebuchadnezzar's city gate. Some archaeologists had dug that up before the communist times, and there it was, the wall and the gate that Daniel saw when he went into the city. I was right there. Amazing. So many things you can find out. We are the product of generations past. Sometimes I've gone into cemeteries, and I was thinking one day, about the different graves that I have seen in my life. Just a few of them. In France, I viewed the grave of Napoleon Bonaparte. It was a coffin and a huge rotunda. And I saw that grave, and I thought about a man who wanted to be the conqueror of Europe. And he wanted to conquer all the countries in Europe and be the king of Europe. I thought about all the widows that he made and all the children that became orphans. And it was an awesome grave. In Spain, in the middle of the country, there's a huge mountain, much like Stone Mountain, Georgia. And in that mountain is carved out a temple. The doors are as high as from the bottom to the top of the ceiling that opened into that temple and built there by slave labor. Now, in England, in the greatest cathedral of them all, I saw the grave of David Livingstone. And I thought about his 29,000 miles he trekked through Africa. And I was moved to want to be dedicated like that and to serve God. In a Scottish parking lot, I saw the grave of John Knox. And right in the parking lot where he's buried. And I thought about the man who prayed, "Give me Scotland or I die." A man who saved Scotland from a Catholic bloodbath in those days. Here's his grave in a parking lot, and every day muddy wheels roll over and park there. And I saw the grave of John Knox, and it gave me a feeling of sadness. In Israel, in a cave, I saw the grave of Abraham and Sarah, and it made me want to be a friend of God. In Germany at Dachau, I saw the mass graves of Hitler's victims, and it gave me a feeling of terror. In Italy, I climbed the mountain, I saw the graves of the Waldensians. Hundreds and thousands of them were murdered for their faith, and graves of sacrifice, and it made me want to be more sacrificial in my life. At Annapolis, Maryland, I saw the grave of John Paul Jones, and it made me love my country a little more. In Montrose, Pennsylvania, I climbed a hill, and I saw the grave of the great evangelist R.A. Torrey, and I was stirred again to live for God. I could go on and on. I've seen the graves of kings and queens and statesmen and presidents and martyrs and unmarked graves, unknown people, deceased people who lived in my world and walked on me on my earth. I've seen a lot of those. In Northampton, Massachusetts, I wandered out through the graveyard, and I found the grave of David Brainerd, and it made me want to pray and be close to God. But not long ago, I drove out to old Haddam, near Edinburgh, Scotland, and I visited the old Abbey Kirk. And there in that kirk, I stood at the grave of Jane Welch Carlyle, the wife of Thomas Carlyle. The inscription read, I'll read it to you, for 40 years. She was an ever-loving helpmate of her husband. By act and word and wearily forwarded him as none else could, and all worthy that he attempted to do. She died at London, April 21, 1866, suddenly snatched from him, away from him, and the light of his life gone out. Jane Welch Carlyle. As I stood at that grave at Haddington that day, a feeling of intense loneliness swept over me because I knew the story of Jane Welch Carlyle. When Thomas Carlyle died in 1881 at the age of 85, biographers started poring over his diaries and his papers, and a startling discovery was made. The faithful and gentle wife of the great writer had been often ignored and slighted and taken for granted, unappreciated for 40 years, while Tom Carlyle, the great writer, lived for one thing, his career and himself. Tom Carlyle was often eccentric, he was moody, and he was away in Scotland when Jane Welch died in London. And when he got the telegram of her death, they say that his world fell apart. Again, on her tombstone for 40 years. She was a true and ever-loving helpmate of her husband, suddenly snatched away from him, and the light of his life as if gone out. I went to the library in England, and I read some of the writings of Carlyle during these events and during this time. Let me just read you a couple of things I found. He went back to London. He said, I looked up at the window, went back to the street where he met her. I looked up at the window of the old room where I had first seen her in 1821. On a summer evening after sunset, 45 years ago, the beautifulest young creature I had ever beheld. Thursday, April 20, 1866, I wandered out into the churchyard, and then came the funeral service at 1 p.m., and then I laid her head in the grave, and all was ended. With the skies looking down on her, there sleeps my little genie, and the light of her face will never shine on me more. And they say the saddest words in English literature are the words written by Carlyle a little bit after that. He said, if I could but see her once more, even if it were but for 5 minutes, let her know that I always loved her through all of that. She never did know it, never, he wrote. If he could just have her back for 5 minutes, he would tell her, the loneliest grave in Scotland. But I suspect there are many such graves scattered across planet Earth, graves of too late and missed opportunity. Oh, that I had you back for 5 minutes. I will tell you all. Many graves like that. I have a clipping that several years ago came out of the U.S. News and World Report. Daughter eulogizes diplomat father. One day I won't wake up, she said, with a tear-stained face, 16 years old. He'd been killed as a diplomat in Bosnia. And she said, I took him for granted. I never told him how much I loved him. And I never showed him how much I cared about him, and she goes on. And you know, there are a lot of situations like that, places of missed opportunity, and surely someday some of us could say, I wish I could go back and not say what I said or not do what I did. If I could live my life over again, things would be different. I'd make better choices and better decisions for my life. But you can't go back. And we think that we've missed so many opportunities, and it's too late now. The songwriter visualizes a place in eternity when we will look back and we'll wish that we had another chance. I'll read you the words. By and by, when I look on his face, beautiful face, thorn-shadowed face, by and by, when I look on his face, I'll wish I had given him more. By and by, when he holds out his hand, welcoming hands, nail-riven hands. By and by, when he holds out his hands, I wish I had given him more. More, so much more. More of my life than I ever gave before. By and by, when I look on his face, I wish I had given him more. I think, you know, we'll all stand before God, and We certainly wish and long that we had given him more. But the thing about it is, we make those decisions now. You can't make them then. You make those decisions on this side of eternity. There's several times, we'll all wish we'd given him more, but there's several times in our lives when certainly we will. At the brink of death, we'll wish we had given him more. I read of the great people when they died. David, he said, I go the way of all the earth, keep the way of the Lord, walk in his ways. And you can read in the Old Testament, Joseph and Abraham, when he was gathered to his people. I want you to turn to one of those occasions, 2 Timothy 4 and verse 6. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 6. And let's look at the homegoing of another one of God's great people. At the brink of death, surely we'll probably look back and say, I wish I'd given him more. But look at Paul. He's on death row. The last chapter of his life, 2 Timothy chapter 4. These are his last words, his last letter to us. He's going to be executed. 2 Timothy 4, and look what he said in verse 6. I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. You know, I want to be able to say that, don't you? When it comes down to the wire, I want to say I'm ready, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I never gave up. I have finished my course. I never quit. I have kept the faith. I never turned back. And he was ready to go. And they say the word, I am now ready to be offered the time of my departure. And they say that in the Greek language that the picture that's being drawn here is a ship that's moored to the harbor. And the word departure, moored to the harbor, and they load the ship, and days go by, and weeks go by, and one day the ship is fully laden, and they take the ropes that hold the ship to the pier, and they cast them aside, and the ship begins to sail out through the harbor. And somebody watching the ship would see it going through the harbor and becoming smaller and smaller, seemingly. It goes through the mouth of the harbor, and then it becomes just a dot on the great sea, and then it disappears. And that's the way it is going to be. One of these days, the ropes that hold us down to this life will be cast aside, and we're set sail on the great sea of eternity to meet God. But I fear that many of us will say, I wish I had given him more. At the brink of death, surely we'll wish we'd given him more. And then at the judgment seat of Christ, we'll wish we'd given him more. Will you turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3? 1 Corinthians and chapter 3, and we're going to look at the judgment seat of Christ, and I'm doing this very hurriedly. But in 1 Corinthians and chapter 3, I find mine too, and okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, the judgment seat of Christ, and we look, please, beginning at verse 11. Now, anybody who knows the Bible at all knows there are different judgments. Some people believe there's one great judgment, the sheep on one side and the goats on the other, but there are several judgments. How do you know they're different judgments? They're named different, have different names. They're different times and locations. So we know they're different. And this is a judgment when we Christians will be judged. Now, we'll not be judged to see whether or not we're going to heaven. That's settled forever. If you're saved, you're saved forever for all eternity. But our life will be judged. What do we do with this life God gave us? Well, look at the judgment seat of Christ in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 11. Other foundations can no man lay, and that is laid which is Jesus Christ. That's why you can't lose your salvation. The foundation that holds you up is Christ. You fall down on the foundation. Other foundations can no man lay, and that is laid which is Jesus Christ. Look at verse 12. Now, if any man build upon this foundation, see how life is built upon that foundation. If any man build upon this foundation, gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire. And the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. So, are you building a life with gold, silver, and precious stones? Those things are in the earth. Fire can't get to those. And if they do, it will only melt just the dross away. It can't destroy them. Are you building your life on gold, silver, precious stones, prayers, witnessing, Bible distribution, and telling other people about Christ? Are gold, silver, precious stones, faithfulness to church, or wood, hay, and stubble? That's what will burn up. Fire gets the wood, hay, and stubble, and it consumes it immediately. He said in verse 13, every man's work shall be made manifest, shall be made known. For the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire. Fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. And what does that mean? Well, I'll be like a video. You know, it's amazing. This is an amazing time. I remember, some of you may remember the old Super 8 movie projectors. How many of you remember that? You're telling your age like I am. And they were just remarkable. We thought that was the greatest technology that would ever be. And you would take pictures of your little kids, you know. They wouldn't just walk, they'd be jumping. That film was always jumping, you know. And you send it away, and 6 months later, you get it back. And how amazing now. You can video something and instantly see that. And the technology is so wide now that we don't even think about it. But will it be something like that? Maybe like a video of our life flashes there, and it's wood, hay, stubble. We've not lived for God. We've quit. We abandon the work of Christ, and suddenly the fire comes down from heaven and burns the image up. I don't know. I don't have the answer for that. I think we've got a clue, though. In Revelation chapter 1, you don't have to turn there. When John saw Christ personally and described him in his glorified state, he talked about his hair and he talks about all of that, his whole person. But then do you remember what he said about his eyes? He said his eyes were as a flame of fire. And I think it's very possible that we stand there before Christ, the one who will see us through and through, and before the searching gaze of God, and we'll wish we had given him more. And then another time we wish we'd given him more is a great white throne judgment. Go to Revelation chapter 20. Revelation chapter 20. Now that's the judgment of all lost people. The second judgment I mentioned tonight. People who don't know Christ, that's their day. In Revelation and chapter 20. And we'll look in chapter 20, verse 11 through 15. It's a horrible account when lost people will stand before God. If your loved ones lost, if they're never saved, that's where this will be theirs. The people you meet every day, lost, so many of them, this will be their judgment. Not ours, thank God. It'll be theirs. In Revelation 20, and look please at look at verse 11. I saw a great throne, white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God. And the books were open, and another book was open, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them. And they were judged, every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. Read on. I saw a new heaven, a new earth. First heaven, first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them. Drop down verse 4. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. You say, I didn't know there would be tears in heaven. I always thought there would never be tears in heaven. Oh, my friend, there will be tears in heaven. At least when we first get to heaven, there will be tears. There'll be multitude of tears. There'll be thousands and millions of tears shed. Why? You think what happened in that chapter before chapter 21? You see a mother or a father or a son or a daughter cast in the lake of fire forever, hopeless, never again to resurface again. You think you can see somebody you love cast into that fire and not shed a tear? Oh, yes, there will be millions of tears at the great white throne judgment. And they won't be in the tears of the unsaved people. They may eyes of the unsaved people. They may have tears, but their tears will not be wiped away. The tears that will be wiped away are the tears in our eyes, because we see people we love more than life for the last time. There will be tears in heaven. God shall wipe away all tears. Is a promise three times given. But the promise is misquoted, that there be no tears in heaven. through the long eternal ages, when we lose the count of years, pain and sorrow all forgotten, then of course there'll be no tears. But when we first get to heaven, we'll appear before the throne Lord, and we'll give account before Him as He tells us in His Word. He will then inspect our record, how we served Him day by day, and there may be tears in heaven. Tears for God to wipe away, tears of sorrow for the missing, loved ones who we thought were saved. Hopefully we said goodbye to when we laid them in the grave. They were good and kind and upright, earnest people, so it seemed, doing all a Christian should do. We never ever dreamed of an hour when they would stand there, and we'd look into their eyes, and that very glance would sentence us as we sentenced them to the fires. Then the house, how some things on which we counted for a rich reward that day were not pleasing to the Master, in the smoke have passed away, and there may be tears in heaven, tears for God to dry that day, and we'll wish we had given Him more. But I think for all eternity, we'll wish we had given Him more. I am satisfied with Jesus. He has done so much for me. He suffered to redeem me. I am satisfied with Jesus. But the question comes to me as I think of Calvary, is my Master satisfied with me? You know, Jesus always thought of others. He lived for others. He died for others. He saw 5,000 people hungry and He fed them. He went out of His way to Samaria to save a broken woman. He walked 25 miles from Capernaum to Nain because a widow had lost her only son, and He brought him back from the grave. And at the cross, He prayed, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." He looked down and saw His mother and said, "John, behold your mother." He always thought about others. Others, Lord, yes, others. May this my motto be, help me to live for others, that I may live like Thee. I started the message with grave. Let me end it that way. Outside of Cambridge, England, there's a beautiful place, an American cemetery. And only Americans are buried there. And it's a fantastic place. It has the look of the Garden of Eden. And Mary and I wept when we went there, seeing thinking about all the Americans who died during the war, during the World War II, and they're buried there in that cemetery. And it's just a place, it's kept like the Garden of Eden. Let me try to describe it to you. There's on one side of the cemetery, there's a huge monument, and on top of that monument is a hand, a hole in a torch. And then you follow the width of the cemetery, and there's a reflecting pool of names, a white wall of names of everybody buried in that cemetery, Americans from all over the place. And at the other end of the width of the cemetery, there's a chapel of sacrifice. We went into that chapel. In that chapel was a plaque dedicated to 4 American airmen. These American airmen had been the plane was in flames, and it was going to come down on a village. And in a split second of time, they had to make a life or death decision. They could let it bail out and let it fall on the village, or they could stay with it and direct it away from the village, and they elected to do that in a split second of time. They made a life-changing decision to die so that others could live. And the people in that village never forgot it. They wanted their children to know about these 4 men that saved the village. They wanted their grandchildren to know, and they put this beautiful plaque in that chapel of sacrifice on the other side of the cemetery, and with the names of those 4 men who died for them on that plaque. The amazing story of sacrifice just starts. You come out of that chapel, and what do you see? You see the white wall of names, thousands of names on a sparkling white wall, and then a beautiful pool running alongside the wall, and the names kind of dancing in the waters. And then on the other width is the arm, and Mary and I just holding the flaming torch. And we stood there and we wept and we thought about all of these young people. We thought about, buried here, how many times they must have longed for home to hug mom and dad or sisters and brothers or our sweethearts. We thought about all the visions of mother's kitchen and all the memories that meant so much to them. How many memories they buried here. And I think standing under the torch under the hand holding the torch, and the plaque read, "To you, we pass with failing hands, we pass this torch. It is yours to be held high." That was the most striking spot of all, because standing there, we could see not only the white wall of names and the names in the reflecting pool, but we saw crosses, white crosses, going over the hill, going hundreds and thousands of crosses, going in every direction. And I thought, how can you describe this? What can you say? And the only word that would come to me was the word "others." These men lived and died for others. May we be like Christ. May we live and die for others. And then at the brink of death, we will not have to say, "I wish I'd given him more." And then at the judgment seat of Christ, and then at the great white throne judgment, and then in all eternity, we'll not have to say, "I wish I had given him more." Let's pray.